Your style is unorthodox, but effective. It is not the art, but the combat that you enjoy.
Man, you come right out of a comic book.
You are now listening to Black Comics Chat.
Black Comics Chat.
We are live on Black Comics Chat.
Black Comics Chat.
Black Comics Chat. We are live on Black Comics Chat.
Black Comics Chat. Black Comics Chat.
Hi, this is Anthony Rutgazer. I'm the writer of The First Hero and Heroes of Homeroom C, and you are listening to Black Comics Chat.
Hi, this is Regine L. Sawyer, owner, writer, creator of Lock It Down Productions and the coordinator and founder of the Women in Comics Collective International. You are now listening to Black Comics Chat.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Just a quick introduction. We're about to get into our episode with Joe Gill. Great episode. But I just want to let you know there was a few audio problems near the beginning of the show during the introductions. So if there's any strange, gaps in conversation, blame it on the technology.
All right. Hello, everybody. What is going on? This is Marcus Kwame, and we are back with another Black Comics Chat. Very excited because we have our I think most super of all of our super guests returning to the show. So we're very happy to have our special guest returning. But first up, I'm going to go around and introduce the members of the crew who are here. Leo should be joining later on tonight, but he's handling some business. But first up, we have, as always, without fail, the international lady of mystery, the Carmen Sandiego of the crew, East Coast transplant. We got Grace in the house.
Yes, good to be in the virtual building, so to speak, and glad to be talking and on the show, getting ready to talk to our guest tonight. Cool.
Hailing all the way from the Blue Czech Republic, we got the
contributor.
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 You know, it's like resume writing. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I know.
Yeah,
I can't tell you how many bios I've had to write with all that stuff. But what's up? So it's I thought it was Blue Czechoslovakia, or is it the Blue Czech Republic? I want to update my Twitter.
They're both applicable. They're both applicable. I believe.
I think I kind of like Blue Czech Republic better.
Yeah.
It kind of has a nice flow too.
It has a nice flow. Because I know the people are like, what the fuck is Blue Czechoslovakia?
it's harder to say too.
Right.
Clearly, I'm having trouble.
Yeah.
But I'm down. I'm ready.
All right. Cool. And as I mentioned, our super guest, one of our favorite people to speak to, returning to the show to speak all about the brand new Power Magic Press Queer Witch Comics Anthology. We got Joe Matt Gill returning to the show. How are you, Joe?
I'm doing great. Hey, everybody. I'm going to admit right off the bat, it took me a cool 30 seconds to understand the joke in Blue Czech Republic.
I know. We're very on brand. And, sometimes we do got to make sure that is on board with our internal jokes. But, you know.
Also, I'm going to reaffirm Tony's Eisner-winning comic status.
Yes.
Because then I get to follow it up with my Eisner-winning cartoonist status for the
same
one.
Absolutely, yes. We got two Eisner winners.
That's right.
50% of the people on the show have won Eisners tonight.
Quite amazing.
Yeah. So
I love those numbers.
Show some respect. Do y'all hear me?
Exactly. We're gonna get y'all some gold chains with a little E on it. Just walk around,
right?
Well, that's hilarious. Absolutely.
So, Joe, obviously, everyone who listens to the show has heard your origin story. But if you like, just give a condensed version, just for the people who might be brand new.
All right, cool. Usually over the years, my condensed version has gotten tighter and better every time, but I'm tired. So today it's going to be like probably really sloppy and leave a lot of stuff out. Cool. So here we go. I grew up in Miami, Florida, real poor. Parents didn't buy books, especially not comics. They didn't know what those were. So I really loved Sailor Moon, and that made me think I should learn how to draw so I can make people feel the way Sailor Moon apparently involves drawings. So I learned how to draw, took many twists and turns and surprise endings in my career path, and eventually ended up self-publishing comics and eventually founding Power and Magic Press, which publishes POC creators, LGBTQ creators, and creators at the intersections, mainly in speculative fiction like fantasy, sci-fi, and eventually horror, but that's a story for another day.
All right, cool. So actually, if you could give us a quick update, last time you were on, you spoke all about your exciting new anthology, Manana. And I know that, you know, things are underway with that. Is there anything you can tell us tonight, or is that all under wraps?
No, it's not under wraps. Pretty much we are past the script phase, so everyone has written their scripts. We are currently on the phase where I learn the hard way that you can't edit an anthology and run a Kickstarter at the same time.
Wow. That was going to be my next question, but go ahead.
Right.
So, the only one that has tripped up so far in their deadlines is moi. So we have extended the entire project back by about 3 weeks. So everything's going to end up working out when we wanted it to for the Kickstarter. It's going to kickstart in May of 2020. But basically, everyone gets like this long, luxurious amount of time to write or to draw their thumbnails. So, you know, I think it's for the best.
Well, and actually, it occurred to me that in bringing it up, I don't think I mentioned what Manana is specifically. So do you want to just give the...
Oh, right, of course. Manana, Latinx comics from the 25th century, is what it says on the tin. It is a comics anthology created entirely by Latinx creators from all over Latin America. And all of the stories take place 500 years from now, which is also 1,000 years from when Christopher Columbus landed in the Caribbean, thus sparking the inception of Latin America and the entire Western world as we know it. So it's mostly sci-fi stories that are speculative fiction, sort of wondering how has society changed, how has technology changed, how have we changed? And yeah, I'm very, very excited about it. It is the first Power and Magic Press anthology to have a cis men in it, so progress.
Wow.
That should quiet a few of the men, right? Meninists or whatever they're calling themselves these days.
And really, and I hope they're not messing up the whole vibe for you. You know, I really hope that's not happening.
But they have such little representation in comics.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Just so sad.
You give them an inch and they just want to keep going. Exactly. It's crazy.
Exactly. I think I made some good choices so far. All the boys in the anthology are being real good. They're meeting their deadlines. They're writing great stories.
Good.
I think I made good calls. So
that's good. That's good. It's almost like, you know, when being black and when the news report comes out about some terrible incident and you're praying that you know, all your folks were behaving.
Yeah,
right.
But
truth.
All right, but so as far as you know, Power and Magic is concerned, we definitely want to, you know, speak all about your current campaign, which is doing well, but people should pledge to while they're listening, preferably. But before you jump into volume two, can you give people who may not have read volume one just a quick, introduction of what this particular anthology series is about.
Yes. So Power and Magic, the Queer Witch Comics Anthology, first kickstarted in 2017. It is the foundational book of Power and Magic Press. It is entirely created by women of color and woman-aligned non-binary people of color. And all of the stories are fantasy tales about queer witches of color. And they can be in any genre. They can be comedy, romance, action, more introspective pieces. Because it's my brand, they're all kind of deep stories that are probably going to make you cry. Like, I hear people like get really messed up reading Power and Magic because it's all about like celebrating what makes like a queer woman of power. It celebrates the fact that queer women of color are queer women of power. There we go, branding. and it sort of uses magic as a metaphor for the inherent worth, like value and capabilities that we have, not because of some fantasy reason, but because as women of color, there's a lot we have to survive. And a lot we're capable of surviving, and a resilience that is so specific to us, which is akin to a superpower. So that anthology came out in 2017, and then we had Immortal Souls, which was a companion book to the first volume. And finally, we have the official full-length volume 2 that is kickstarting right now. It is just more, bigger, better version of the first book. We've got a lot of people in it that I've been wanting to work with for a long time. For example, Che Grayson and Steens have a story in it, which is thrilling as hell. Also, Nicole Miles is in it, who's done some incredibly beautiful work, especially with Shortbox. So she's next level. An illustrator named Bex Glendening, who, again, next level illustrator. And we actually worked together on this as her first comic ever. And she knocked it out of the park. So I'm really excited for people to see that. Yeah, just an amazing team of people. Cynthia Yuan Cheng is in it, who has a graphic novel coming out from First Second soon, all about her time on the high school football team when she was in high school, which is amazing. I'll stop talking so you can ask specific questions, because I could go on about the anthology forever.
Okay. Well, I just want to plug in the first one. So not only are the stories great, as someone who definitely has a copy and loves it, the actual cover itself and the book itself is like beautiful. Like, I remember getting it in the mail and open up and like, oh my God, this thing is like, I don't want to like mess it up. I don't want anything to get on it. Like, it's such a beautiful cover, the colors, everything is just, you know, amazing. So, you know, even before opening it up, I was like just blown away. So, like, kudos to that as well too.
Oh, thank you so much. That's a great prompt to shout out the cover illustrator. Her name is Ash Samuels. She is also doing the cover for volume 2. Because why fix what ain't broke? She is incredible. And yeah, I'm probably just going to have her do every cover that ever happens for Power and Magic, so long as she'll have us. Definitely check out both covers on the Kickstarter for folks listening right now.
Cool. Yeah. So actually, can you speak to the people about I'm looking at the tiers right now, and you got a lot of cool tiers. So can you talk to people about what they can get when they back this awesome project?
Ooh, yes, there are so many tiers, y'all. basically, the entire catalog is up for grabs. You can either just back for volume 2 if you're already all set with all of Power and Magic Press's books, which, you know, you should be because they're excellent. They're even award-winning. We also have a reprint of Volume 1, which is part of where the funds for this Kickstarter are going, because the first book has long since sold out. You can't get copies of it anymore unless we're able to reprint it through this Kickstarter. So you can get the second volume and the first volume if you've never read it before, or even if you like want to buy one as a gift, or buy one that doesn't have the same typos in it as the first one anymore.
I hadn't noticed them, so now I'm going to have to look for them.
I didn't either, yeah. Right.
I'm the editor, so yeah, I live with them every day of my life.
I think I read a meme somewhere. If you really want to find all the typos and the work that you're doing, just hit the submit button.
That's real.
100%. That is 100% true. Like, obviously we scoured the book back and forth to make sure beforehand. But then as soon as it was in front of me, I'm like, oh, here's an obvious one that just blind to the first time. But yeah, so you can get the first and second book. You can get the whole Power and Magic Press series to date by adding Immortal Souls to it, which is the companion book to Volume 1. And you can also add our most recent book before this, which is Heartwood, Non-Binary Tales of Sylvan Fantasy. That one is also what it sounds like. It's fantasy set in the forest and starring and created by an all non-binary team. And apart from books, we also have a book plate. We always create a beautifully illustrated book plate. This time it's by Alexis Cook, who is also one of the contributors in this volume. And we also have an enamel pin that has been especially designed in honor of the new cover. It is by a brilliant enamel pin designer named Hanako Lambert, and y'all should definitely check that out if you haven't looked at it yet, Black Comics Chat, because I haven't stopped screaming about it ever since they showed me the design for it. It's this like solemn, beautiful eyelashes, eyes closed, like Black girl with this flowing hair and hidden stars in her hair that are going to be revealed by when light shines on them. And she has these giant pink roses just framing her face. It's, I still like can't even believe it that it's going to be a thing.
Well, dope. So let's talk about just, because obviously we've spoken multiple times with you about your anthologies, and you know, we just spoke about the fact that even you are human in the editing process. So
yep.
Like, talk to us a little bit about where you've grown, or like what's changed for you as an editor of an anthology. What's different going into this this project?
The main thing is organization. Before, I used to just sort of write down in a notebook what, you know, where everyone was at, and I would lose the notebook or like forget to update it or like, et cetera. And then I'd have to go through all my emails to like catch up at some point and be like, yes, this person did turn in their stuff. I'm not crazy. And now I have, thanks to Toronto Comics, actually, I did some freelance editing for them, and they were like, hey, do you use this extremely elaborate and streamlined spreadsheet system to keep track of everyone? Because we do. You should do it too. And I was like, why, yes, thank you. I will do that for the rest of my life. So yeah, there's a next level of, organization and like process tracking going on now that wasn't happening before, which makes the whole thing a lot easier. People get their what they need from me a lot faster and more efficiently. It's really great. And as far as the editing process itself, I can feel myself sort of entering a flow with how I edit scripts in particular. It can be a little challenging when you're starting out editing a script to sort of pay attention to every single thing that could be going wrong or could be improved in a script, because they're beyond typos and beyond grammar. There's voice consistency, and there's proposed panel structure from the writer's end, and there's balancing, like, how detailed a writer is getting and what they want to see in every panel versus realistically what you think they should be leaving room for the artist for, because sometimes people can overwrite. And then there are people who can underwrite, and sort of balancing, like, okay, do you not know what you want to happen on this page, or do you just want the artist to have full liberty, or do you not see, like, do you see it as the artist's job to figure this out, and you're the writer, you only have to write dialogue? When I personally think it's somewhere in the middle. Like, the writer should have a certain idea about what should be physically happening between characters and in scenes on every page, while also being flexible based on the fact that they're often not an artist. So there's a lot that someone with, like, a visual acumen brings to the table that wouldn't have been there right. without that back and forth. So yeah, it's basically becoming better at, like, doing, like, being okay with doing multiple passes on scripts, because I used to try to notice everything all at once, which actually takes a lot longer than going through it and saying, I'm only paying attention to typos, screw everything else. And then going through it again and be like, okay, I'm only paying attention to voice, for ignore everything else, et cetera.
So that's really cool. And, you know, obviously, as an artist myself, it's really cool to hear an editor that, and obviously, you know, you've done both sides of it. You've done, you know, visual art, and you've done writing. So you can kind of see the whole process, because in comics, you know, the artist and the writer are obviously equally important, but in some ways, like, it's like speaking different languages, and you're able to kind of, you know, bring those two together and actually have that background, because, you know, not every editor necessarily gets the nuances of art, and, you know, and even stuff like what you mentioned about the page count and make sure there's room, because that is one of the parts of creating a comic that not everybody gets, is that it's always a battle for you know, not covering up everything and having a good word art balance. So cool.
Yeah, one of my current fights, not with anyone in particular, just with people I edit in general, is getting them to make an even numbered comic, because what's happening a lot is all right, a comic doesn't technically have to be an even number of pages, but it makes everyone's life way easier if it is.
Okay.
The small details.
Yeah, because it's mainly in a collection, because someone's comic is coming immediately after theirs.
Mm. Yeah.
So it eliminates the need to have to, like, have, like, an extra page with, like, nothing really important on it, just to, like, make sure that the next person's comic also starts on the right-hand side and not the left, so that it doesn't ruin their page flip reveals.
Right.
Yeah.
And it might just be a me thing, but if there's like a little design element, extra, like, space or page between comics, I would prefer that there was one between every single one.
Oh, yeah.
Or between none of them.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I'm very symmetry minded. And what will happen sometimes is folks pace out their stories, and they're like, all right, it's an even number of pages. And I'm like, great, let's keep rolling. And then they're like, oh, this adding one more page will make it work. So I added one more, and now it's 13. And I'm like, why are you doing this to me? the worst is when they're right and it only actually needs one more page, and then I just have to suck it up. But wherever possible, one of my biases is totally like, okay, but can you add two more pages there? Can we make that work?
Wow. Those are like the small details that, like, you know, as readers don't really like. I mean, we probably may notice that, but like, I wouldn't even think to, you know, think about like making sure that everybody's page, you know, everybody's comic starts on the same page so that there's like this uniformity. So, yeah, the small details go a long way.
Yeah, it's a lot.
I feel like I should know this from how many times I've spoken to you, but did, as far as your, because you obviously have a very in-depth, you know, understanding of the medium and, you know, just constructing it kind of from start to finish. What was your, did you just kind of learn on the go, or did you have like formal comics training?
I have taken comics related classes in the past, but the foundation, my foundational understanding of like how comics work, and like stuff like page flips and like how to lay out a page and what margins should be like and how like printing your own zine and stuff like that works, all of that I mainly learned in high school and early college online, and in no formal way, just simply by being part of a forum where nerds who make comics were, and we'd just talk about comics and we'd go in each other's threads and talk about stuff, and people would be like, oh, I'm working on this, but I messed up the margin. And it's like, oh, what do you mean you messed up the margin? It's like, oh, comics margins work like this. And it's like, cool, now I know that person I hang out with. So yeah, it was all just basically like, I guess, an oral education where people just tell you how to do things without having to like go to school for it or anything. Which yeah. Now, those were the days of the internet where we didn't quite have Twitter yet. Like even YouTube was just becoming a thing. So it felt like it was a little more difficult or like not as common to find an intentional collection of tutorials anywhere. Like you couldn't just go to YouTube and be like, show me how to paint in Photoshop, go. And it just shows you the end. Or you could just, like it was almost like you not only can't access like these organized wells of free information yet, but you, because those like organized areas weren't as known, you also weren't sure what you didn't know and what it was you were supposed to be Googling, for example, if you did want to know about it. Right. So yeah, I basically just picked it all up by being friends with people who make comics.
Cool. And it's also a good example to the internet that it can be used for healthy purposes.
The internet is a free education if you let it be.
Right. Exactly. Looks like.
Hey, boss. I'm checking in.
which one of us?
Well, I'm talking to Joe. I mean, yeah. I learned all my comics writing. I just basically write Alan Moore pages. I just write a big block of text with very little punctuation, and that's basically how I do. That's not true. But I love Alan Moore pages. Alan Moore pages are really cool. There's no right way to do comics, is my point.
Right.
How y'all doing?
I was debating whether to bust your chops on air about how your scripts are like Alan Moore scripts.
way too much bullshit in there. But like, all right, so this is interesting because there are two people on this call that actually have thoroughly read my scripts. and yeah, like Marcus, my collaboration with Marcus has always been this kind of thing where, you know, Marcus will throw out like three quarters of what I indicate in there. And then I'll be like, yo, I did this. And I'm like, all right, that is fucking perfect.
Wait. Sometimes. No, seriously. I usually try to keep everything, and the times when I don't, we talk about it.
Of course we talk about it. But like 99 times out of 100, the changes that you have are the ones that I want. I'm like, oh, that's like ideal. but I do, I over indicate all the time. I do.
Yeah.
No, I mean, we can explore it as little or as much as you want, Joe.
For context, folks, Leo is one of our esteemed cis men in Guyana, Latinx comics from the 25th century. I mentioned earlier that we've upped our representation game by including cis men in a power and magic anthology.
Yes.
I praise that.
You are a trailblazer.
Like let's you know what? For once, let's let cis men in.
That's what I said. You know, that's what I said.
Just to see what happens. Just to see what comes of it. I mean, like they've just been blockaded nonstop, and
I'm not justifying that statement.
Not at all.
Yo, what if somebody just takes that sound bite?
I'm gonna do right now. I'm gonna do what Gina Rodriguez should have done in this.
Uh-oh.
Wait, which time? All right. Yeah.
She came back. She did the apology. Stop. I mean, we don't see that a lot. Let's be frank. We don't see the apology a lot. Like, I need to say sorry for the way I said sorry.
And maybe I don't think I even realized that she did that.
She right. Totally
exactly.
Did. Pretty hilarious. Pretty hilarious. That's like some like deep long term relationship shit. Like when you're like apologizing to your significant other about your apology. That is some investment.
More people need to apologize for the way they apologize.
You are so right. Yeah.
In all seriousness, that is better than a lot of people do,
No. Without it, you're right, because usually what happens is we get the apology and then everyone excoriates them for it, and then they just don't go on Twitter for like 3 months.
Yeah.
And then like move on. Like that's usually how that goes. So I'm like 50-60% kidding. Like I actually thought it was cool that she sort of like, reframed what she said and even apologized for the way she came out. Like I thought that was weirdly rare. And I mean, like, now apply that to, like, the majority of people in that same situation. And let's see, like, what happens with that. But am I pointing that out wrong? Is that is rare, right? Like,
oh,
that
yeah,
apology.
Most
definitely.
Because, I mean, obviously, we're all familiar with the whole, I'm sorry if you were offended.
Right. That's my favorite. The non-apology. Like, I'm sorry you're terrible, but.
I'm sorry your weakness. is a problem.
Yeah, like they do a blanket thing where it's like if apology, right. It's like if I offended you, I'm sorry, which implies that if they didn't, they're absolutely
exactly,
not.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
then,
common.
Then it's no longer an apology at that point.
Right.
Because,
yeah. We get that a whole lot.
The only real apology is change behavior.
That's real.
Uh-huh.
That's real.
Well, yeah, that's real talk. How you doing, Joe?
I was saying off mic that I am more tired than usual because Joe also has a day job now. Joe doesn't just do the at-home comics life. Joe now does the at-home remote position day job life, too.
Can you speak on your more gainful employment?
Yeah, definitely. It is actually my job to promote this company as its communications coordinator. I now work with Get Media Lit, which is an education platform that pairs original comics with lesson plans, fostering literacy, social emotional learning, and digital citizenship in middle school students.
That is awesome.
How dope is that, right?
I mean, yeah.
It's a very, 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 like, dream level job on multiple levels. Also, the characters that star in these original, like, comics-based lesson plans also have their own webcomic outside of the platform. They are called The Uncommons, and they are a Black female-led team of superheroes who are working together to sort of stop an unseen disaster from befalling their futuristic, like, utopian city that they all inhabit. And the only one who even has a glimpse or notion that something is coming is the main character, Iris. Her superpower is she has enhanced vision, which allows her to see things like people's heart rates or probabilities of where she throws a punch, where will it land, and stuff like that. And she recently manifested her powers in a new way, which was glimpsing the future. And I've been told many times while explaining this plot that it's like, it's a story about a black woman who knows some bad shit's gonna happen and she has to convince people, even though she saw it with her own eyes. How appropriate.
So that works on multiple levels. Because you have you have just the struggle of getting people to listen, and then that's real. Does she know how impeachment will work out?
She lives in a not Earth but kind of like Earth world, so she never even had to deal with Trump. God bless her.
Bless her.
I want to know what that's like. Anyway,
I want to know where that is.
That's really cool though, Joe. It is a dream job, and you know you're definitely, I think, the most suited for it. So.
Thank you very much. And Leo, about your script, did you get my email?
Wow! Oh, this is really how it gets made. Critiques.
I received an email today.
All right, good. Today. So my only other update for you is that I am halfway through your script.
Wow!
And pretty much every note is, these are words. Put less of them.
Wow, this is real. I didn't know we were gonna get this raw.
This is a treat,
oh my
right?
Goodness.
This is live critique. I love this.
I'm gonna get my popcorn. What?
Right?
I mean there's no shock occurring right now.
That's all y'all get for free.
Okay.
No doubt.
Cool. So, all right, Joe, I had, two questions, two related questions. One is, we spoke briefly about your work both as an editor and and as a creator. So, it's a two-part question. The first part is, what project that you've worked on are you most proud of as a creator? And the second part is, what project are you most proud of as an editor?
That second question is like asking me to pick a favorite child.
I know. I pick them.
It exists. You just don't want to admit it.
You know you have one.
I feel like I deserve that question because I'm the one that opened the rawness gates. All right. So my favorite thing I've ever made as a creator. Let's start there. I wish this wasn't the answer, but it is. And I wish it wasn't the answer because it's something I made 6 years ago. And that is Clear Quartz. I don't know if I knew y'all at the time that it was online. It's not online anymore. Mainly because it was a slightly animated short comic, and I no longer have web hosting for that. But yeah, my favorite thing that I've ever made is called Clear Quartz. It is a kind of, I don't want to call it magic realism, but it's a little dreamlike, a little psychedelic, and it's a full color comic in a style that I don't normally do, and it's about, they're not a kid, they're not an adult, they're just sort of like a person, a little fantasy person who's wandering through the woods, and they're lost, they're not sure where they are, or where they're going or how they got there. And they come across a hut in the middle of the trees, and inside that hut is a magical two-headed sage. And when they talk to the two-headed sage, they learn that they have two souls inside of them, just like the two-headed sage. And in order to find their twin soul, they need to jump into this ebony lake that stands between them and the sage. And it's unclear what's in it. It's unclear how deep it is. It's unclear if it's water or what will happen when the little character goes inside. But the sage assures the character that when they go into the liquid, they will die. And the reason they will die is because they have to die before they can find their twin soul. Finding their twin soul makes them a completely different person. Therefore, the person that jumped into the water or water-like is dead. And it ends with the little character sort of mulling over that decision and deciding to jump into the lake.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. Is there... So there's no way to read it right now?
No, there's no way to read it right now. I can send y'all the pages to look at later, but yeah. It was paired with some light JavaScript as part of like a class that I was doing, because I made the comic and I was like, hey, this final assignment for my coding class is a JavaScript site. So I was like, yeah, it would be cool if I animated this thing. And it, I think sharing it online is sort of what kicked off me really being part of the comics community. Hmm. Like, it directly led to me meeting all the people that have led to me just, I don't know, not being alone in my room at my desk drawing weird stuff and no one really knowing about it.
Wow, we're learning new stuff tonight.
I know. I'm totally unfamiliar with this.
This is real. Cool. All right. So are you just hoping that we'll forget about the editor part, or?
Yeah, it was great.
Good one, Marcus. Good one.
I did almost forget. Any
All right. Here's what I'll say. Okay. I'm going to say Heartwood because it has a hard cover and golden edges.
The cover is amazing. It was
good. Another great text, yeah.
Yeah, keep it materialistic. That's good.
Yeah, because as far as the actual story inside all these books, I truly do not have a favorite. But I do have a favorite print job, and it is Heartwood. Okay.
So what you're saying is you like your pretty child the best.
Yeah, I'm that kind of mother.
Anything else that you want to tell us about the second volume that maybe we haven't asked you already?
I guess that it continues my trend towards writing for other people to draw. I started that with Heartwood. Normally I draw my own anthology stories. But in Heartwood, I only wrote my story and someone else drew it. And for Power and Magic, Volume 2, I'm continuing that. I sort of thought of doing it with Heartwood as like a one-time thing, just for the sake of time. But I'm sort of learning why people give comics writers a lot of guff. Because I'm like, wait a minute. So after I write the script, I could just like be done.
No comments.
So I pasted the forbidden fruit and I'm like, I'm kickstarting this anyway. I'll just pay someone to draw this for me. Oh, hallelujah. What a whole new world. What a joy to not have to draw a comic after writing it.
That's real. That's real, though.
You know, I like, for the most part, I have this thing, and I don't know if people on this call agree with it necessarily, but like, if my biggest problem is probably the fact that I never think that anything I've ever done is finished, even the things that I've finished. I've never in my life now, I've been freelance writing for almost 4 years. I've never sent in anything that I felt was done. I just sent it in because I had to send it in, because it was just time to send it in. And everything from, like, you know, actual, like, fiction to articles and stuff like that. I have a serious problem with that. I don't know if anybody else in this call does. Anybody else in this call face that particular bugbear?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's hard because, like, I'll give you a good example of this. Mm-hmm. So the essay that I recently wrote and posted, I just wrote and then I just kind of just ended it. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, I think this is the way it should end, you know? And the person who edited it was just like, maybe you might want to think about a different ending. And I'm like, well, for me, it's like, once I get my point across in the story, like, I'm done. But sometimes it's also like, I don't know how else to go. So I'm just going to leave it here because maybe I can keep going. And if I keep going, I don't know if I'm going to stop.
Right.
Yeah.
That's like, that's kind of a big part of it. But it's also that, like, I, like, left to my own devices, like, I'll just tinker with something and, like, until I'm dead. Like, I'll just never stop tinkering with it. And, like, you kind of have to, like, just, like, put a marker and be like, all right, it is currently done at whatever point. And that doesn't, like, belie, like, stuff like edits even for articles and stuff like that. Like, of course, you can, like, return to it. But even that send has never felt right to me in 4 years.
I think that it is. I mean, number one, I've definitely been there, you know what I mean, where I thought that something wasn't done, but I had to get it in. But I feel like there's the times where over the years, I've been able to tell the difference between the times where there was genuinely something that I needed to do that I hadn't gotten done yet, and the times where it's just, you know, my mind working on itself. So
right.
I feel there is a difference between the two. But yeah, like, kind of like, you know, knowing which one you're dealing with at the moment can be tricky.
Yeah, I feel like my issue is less knowing when to stop or where to end something, or like whether or not something has reached an end. Like, I always know exactly when something should be over, or like at what point it needs to be over. But I'll often look back at something and be like, it needed more stuff in the middle, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, with my dissertation, that's where I was. I mean, and I had my committee to be like, look, if you're going to graduate and if you're going to finish this, we need to, like, I know you can write all day, every day. And then their big thing was like, save it for the book. Right. And so, you know, it definitely those, like, well, I want to make sure I put this in. I need to put this in. And they're like, you can't put everything in there. So, you know, just kind of like even making the decision to stop, I know for me was just kind of like, dang, okay, but there's just something else, you know, but it's just kind of like, well, if this wants to happen, then this has to happen. So, yeah.
That's what you were saying, Tony. My eternal note from my English teachers in high school was always, this essay is too short. And I'm like, but I made my point.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it should have added like two more quotes in this paragraph to support it. And I'm like, but I'm obviously right. Why do I gotta belabor the fact that I made the correct point?
That's real. That's real. Seriously.
Ugh. Yeah, no, like that's one of my struggles with like writing like Screen Rant news trash. Is that like, and they're not alone in this, but there's like a lot of sites that they're like, all right, you need like every single piece on a site needs to be 400 to 450 words. And it's like, this is literally a fucking article about a celebrity tweeting. Like, I don't have 400 words to this fucking celebrity. But then they're like, no, you got to get four. So then you're like, you know, fucking you may know Roseanne from her old show from the 90s. Like, and then you're like just coming up with like fluffy bullshit, like just to pad out like this finished piece. And it's obnoxious. But there's like, at least in terms of I was going to say cultural criticism, but not even that, just like pop culture, like, you know, reportage. There is like an algorithm, you know, that's like linked to Google about like the correct length of a story and how that relates to how it like gets boosted up the search engine charts and SEO and all that. So you end up doing that and it's like total nonsense. And no one even reads it. It's like if you ever go look up a recipe and there's like 800 words about like, I was first in Catalina when I first had a fucking, and you're just like, scroll. You're like, I just want to know what to fucking preheat my oven to, and then I want to know what's in it. And that's all I want to know. I don't need to know about your fucking, like, your in-laws, like, bullshit, like, you know, I was thinking a while ago, I was thinking about like someone should make an app that just eradicates that from like your Chrome searches. Like when you go to click on one of those blog posts, it just eliminates all the pros and just gives you the recipe. So
like a literary wrap it up B box.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I hate those recipes.
Yeah.
I did discover once, when I did read all the way through, and I'm not saying they all have this in them, but at least some do. I once read one all the way through, and most of the paragraphs in it were sort of explaining specific techniques around, like, how to whisk this thing and how fast and what the difference is between doing it this way or that way and, like, the textures it produces in the food. And I'm like, okay, you're actually explaining, like, cooking science right now.
Right. That's a little more interesting. Yeah.
But I don't want to know how you appropriated my culture by saying whatever. Just
why is it? It's the appropriated recipes are the ones with the most summary.
Yeah. Of course, because they got it's something true. To prove.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, I love how we go on these tangents. So, can we talk about mooncakes for a second?
Ooh, yes, we can always talk about mooncakes.
So, for those who don't know, can you explain mooncakes and your role in that?
Yeah, mooncakes is a young adult graphic novel, or middle grade, I'm not sure. But anyway, it is a graphic novel from Lionforge, written by Suzanne Walker and illustrated by Wendy Hsu, and lettered by me. And it is about a witch and a werewolf who are childhood friends, and they fall in love after reuniting and facing an evil witch in their neighborhood. And the main character, the main character uses a hearing aid, the werewolf is non-binary, and they are both Chinese, so, like, I was 1,000% on board as soon as I first saw it when it was being posted as a webcomic. But yeah, now it is entirely finished as a graphic novel. It sold out of its first printing before it was even on shelves. So it sold out of its first printing through pre-orders. Mm. So it's already in its second printing. It's doing fantastically. And yeah, it's a gorgeous book. Wendy Hsu is an incredible artist. And also, Wendy Hsu is in Power and Magic Volume 2.
That's awesome. I had noticed that it there was like a big deal around mooncakes for New York Comic Con. And I really didn't know you were lettering it until like after the fact. And I was like, shit, I could have picked it up, but I didn't because I've been running around. But yeah, so, but then I saw an article in which I think you may have done an interview for another podcast about it. So I just wanted to make sure we talk about that a little bit. How was it to like to work for Lionforge? What was that experience like?
It was interesting. yeah, I'm not going to pull any punches on Lionforge right now, so get ready.
Here we go.
you got your popcorn?
I do
already.
I have my beef with Lion Forge, but mainly on an executive level. I don't know if everyone listening to this episode is aware of it, but when Lion Forge and Oni Press merged into one company a few months ago, they laid off hella people. Mm-hmm. Including at Lion Forge, including laid off one of their best editors, in my opinion, the Steens, as well as other people. So how that relates back to Mooncakes is Hazel Nulevant was our editor on Mooncakes, and they were fantastic, excellent, an incredible editor. I loved working with them on letters. 1010 would work with again. And right around the time we were wrapping up, we heard very abruptly from Hazel that they had been laid off. This was before the merger. This was back in December. So they were like shortly before Christmas. And it left a very bad taste in my mouth. Oh, hello?
Yeah, we're here.
I'm here.
Okay. We're here. There because my computer went to sleep for some reason, even though I'm right. I was like, oh no, did it? Okay, but I'm here. Anyway, this is what editing is for.
looking at Marcus right
never
now.
Happened. Right. Never happened.
So it left a poor taste in my mouth to be like right, like dotting the I's, crossing the T's figuratively on this lettering, and then to hear that Hazel wouldn't be employed anymore. Because it almost felt like, I personally felt like we didn't get a chance to celebrate being done. Or like the whole celebration of like, yeah, team, including Hazel, who edited this whole graphic novel brilliantly, we did it. It's done. Let's sit in this moment together of having completed this graphic novel together. But it was like, we finished it and Hazel's fired for no reason. Oh, so it left a little bit of a sting. So that is my take on working with Lion Forge. Excellent editors. Not so excellent management, in my opinion, and I hope a union happens. I haven't heard anything, but that would be great. I want everyone to unionize. Kickstarter is unionizing right now, so support that, listeners.
Wow. I worked with Hazel with Puerto Rico Strong, so I find that to be very interesting. They were part of the editorial team for yeah. that book. So, wow. When you ask a question you weren't really expecting the answer to, it's like, well.
Let me talk some shit right now.
Okay, well, I'm at the very least glad that the book has come out. It does sound amazing, and I do want to get my hands on it.
Oh, yeah, it is an incredible book, and everyone... Absolutely, everyone should buy it.
I also want to let you know that I have also backed your Kickstarter today.
Same here. Ditto.
Thank you.
I think the whole team did. I think I saw a tweet that Leo did as well.
Yeah, I just backed it while y'all were talking, and I was trying to be chill, but thanks, Tom.
You know what? That's okay. I'm ready to put everybody's business out there.
I've just been busy. We were talking, and I was like, oh, shit, I haven't done that yet. All right, let me correct that.
I feel like this is the episode where everyone's getting put on blast.
Always.
We're not even done yet. Okay. Anything else before we move on to topics?
I would just say, everyone who's listening, back this book, back this book, back this book.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Okay. Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I also wanted to say thank you because I know that from the last Kickstarter, I had ordered like the entire collection and then I moved.
Oh, I was
so afraid that the books got lost in the mail. I wrote this like frantic DM, like, so please tell me you haven't sent them out yet.
Meanwhile, they're like, oh God, Tori's gonna yell at me for not sending them out yet.
No. I was actually glad. I was like, because it. I wasn't thinking about, like, when you move, you don't think about the pending deliveries that you are getting that you've never shut off.
Right.
And I was just like, holy shit.
Like, oops.
Right. But the other thing also that I was actually, I think the original reason also was that before I left Harlem, there were people who were stealing other people's mail and packages. And I was just like, I will fight somebody if they if they take my books, I'm fighting somebody. I'm just letting you know.
I think that's a I don't know, a promo or an endorsement you can put on your website, you know?
Yeah.
Tony will they fight you for books. This book.
I'm fighting. I know. I'll fight you. I'll fight you for some power and magic.
Because you won't fight for just any male, but that one you will. You'll go to blows.
But that one you will, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Seriously.
I need to isolate that audio and make it my type verification.
There you go. Okay, so going on to topics, I think first thing we want to talk about is we do have a Patreon, folks. So if you are listening to this, please support us on Patreon. We're trying to keep the lights on here, but also we're trying to do better work. We do great with a bunch of interviews from New York Comic Con and a couple of other shows that we do that we don't normally post. So we're getting better at it. So especially now that we've kind of moved away from the live shows at the moment. We're trying to get there. This is the third show that we've recorded, I believe, in the last week. Some of them will go on posted normally, and others will be on Patreon. So if you want to really sort of get ahead and listen to what it is that we say, because I think we're pretty funny, join us on Patreon. The tiers are there and they're affordable. So we should probably record that as part of like a commercial.
Yo, you know what? I say, Tony, I say let's just put our laundry like right on the table and it ain't
easy. Here we go.
Okay. So like this is the deal. We originated as a live show. And to be honest, I prefer Black Comics Chat as a live show. Yes. I think that that's like kind of part of our essence. That's part of our bloodstream. Right now, Google sucks, and we can't record the show live and stream it to YouTube the way that we always used to. That's and great. It seems that one method to do that will be to basically like pay a new rate to essentially accommodate how we did things for literally years. Mm-hmm. And if we can get Patreon up to that level to pay for that. So like that's not the end goal of Patreon. The end goal of Patreon is to actually empower us to like release more and continued content and new ideas more than we've ever had before. But that's a very baseline goal because we already like pay out of pocket for this show and we need like a way to kind of like get back to square, which does involve now an injection of money that we didn't previously need and that sucks. So if you're listening to this end of the Live Black Comics Chat Show, if you've never heard the Live Black Comics Chat Show and want to check it out, help us get there is my point.
Wow. That's great. You should be a writer.
That was an excellent commercial.
I'll look into it. No promises.
Okay. Let's see. Joe tweeted about Men in Black. Let's get her review.
Oh my God.
this is the most recent one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What year did Men in Black come out?
All right. To Google. Hold on.
I'm going there too.
97. OG 97.
I'm guessing.
97? Okay. Oh, wow. Yeah.
The most recent one. Was it this year?
Was that 2019? Or
No, it was this year because I saw posters. Because I moved to LA and I saw posters on the thing next. All right. Bonus secret question. Who published the original comic book series?
Oh, shit. I don't even know.
It's not anyone who's big right now.
Yes, it's not anyone who's big right now.
I'm kicking myself because I literally saw it in the credits last night. I'm already, like, blanking on it because they don't, like, do they even exist? Is it someone who even exists at all?
Really. You know? Not really, yeah. They don't really exist anymore. Like, they've been caught.
Is it called Malibu?
Yes.
Malibu? Yeah.
Yes, Grace, you got it. And they don't exist because I think Marvel just bought them all out. So, like, I don't think you'd see that label. Like, it hasn't existed in, like, at least a decade.
Well, yeah, what else used to be on Malibu? I feel like
Prime was on Malibu, which was made by that pedophile who was arrested for child porn.
It's out there. That's cool.
Wasn't
ready for that one.
I mean, it's really ugly that happened. Yeah. And Prime was like one of Malibu's biggest comics until he was exposed for his fucking despicableness. The Exiles. You remember the Exiles? I think Prime was the Exiles. Yeah, and they did a bunch of like manga that they kind of adapted more for American audiences. They reversed the orientation of the book, and like Robotech comics under Malibu and
Robotech. Wow.
There was a bunch of, I was a Robotech stan when I was a little kid. That used to be on when I woke up before I had to go to school. If I woke up early enough, I could watch it. It was at like 6 a.m. You could watch Robotech. Robotech cartoons on New York City television. Awesome. Yep,
absolutely.
I loved it. All right. I'm sorry. All right. Please go. Tell us about, because I haven't seen, has anybody on this show seen it aside from Joe?
I've seen it. Yeah,
I've seen it.
Oh, you've seen it.
No,
okay. All right.
The new one. No, I haven't seen it.
The new one.
Please spoil it. I don't care.
Okay, yeah, go ahead. Wait. Before you speak, I have one last thing to say, which is when I interviewed Tessa Thompson, I did create...
Lucky bastard.
I did create what's called the Tessa Thompson rule, which is an ode to the Harry Dean Stanton rule, which is something that Roger Ebert made back in the day, which said, if Harry Dean Stanton is in it, it is not a bad movie. Because he never did an actually bad movie. He made movies that weren't the best movie, but he never did a bad movie. And I said that Tessa Thompson has the same distinction. Continue.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Men in Black International is a bad movie.
Oh, they did it to her.
Oh, my God. I love you.
Oh, man.
Please continue. I'm here.
I had worries about that. All right. Yes. I'm here.
Wait. But to confirm again, am I the only one who's seen it?
No, I've seen it too.
You've seen it too, Grace. Grace, you agree it's a bad movie?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't go to the theater and watch it. I watched it on my Fire Stick, and I had to. It took 2 days to watch it because I struggled. I went in like, okay, I'm gonna watch this, and then it was, you know, it kind of lost my attention, and I was like, oh, okay, you know, I stopped it, and then I came back the next day and finished it. But it, you know, I don't normally do that with a movie. I just go, you know, go through it, and I didn't want to suffer, so I was like, I'm just gonna stop. And then I just came back. So yeah, it was, you know, Tessa Thompson, you know, going to the role. Yeah, she was good, but like, yes, it's a bad movie that starred Tessa Thompson.
Shit.
Yeah, I'm gonna be okay. Given Leo's rule, this might, I feel like this is mostly controversial because of Leo's rule, but I'm gonna say it. My controversial take is that Tessa Thompson should not have been in this movie, and hear me out. Tessa Thompson is perfect and flawless, but I don't think the character that Tessa Thompson sort of exudes most naturally lended itself to the high level comedy antics that I want from a Men in Black movie. Mm. Like I take her too seriously. Like she's too poised. She's too like, I don't know, like, and I can't picture her playing anything other than like a poised, intelligent, like almost straight man to the, like, to a buffoon that she's paired with. But then Chris Hemsworth wasn't a big enough buffoon.
Mm, right. I would agree with that. Mm-hmm.
Balance it out. So it just felt like two hot people saying mildly entertaining things to each other. Like it wasn't like an exciting anything. Here's my sort of my anecdote that kind of like sums up my experience. There is a scene in the movie that I missed while it was on. And I didn't miss it, or rather, I missed it while facing the television.
While you were watching it?
Because like, I literally started complaining to the people I was watching it with. I was like, that transition didn't make any sense. They went straight from like doing this, and then in the very next scene, they're doing this. There should have been like a scene in between. And they both just looked at me, and they're like, something else did happen in between that. It was short, but it did happen. And I was like, "How? What are you talking about?" I was looking right at the TV, and they're like, "Did you black out watching this movie?" And I'm like, "Apparently."
Oh my goodness!
It's hilarious.
Did y'all see the last Men in Black?
Prior to this one? What was the last one? Prior
to this apparently one? Apparently was three, I did not see. I did not see. I saw one and two, and I liked both one and two.
Yes. Yep.
But I've never seen three.
I don't even remember what three was.
Yeah, I knew three came out. I wasn't watching that shit. Nope. No, wasn't it like Men in Black?
It says it came back in 2012, and I'm like, that's not that long ago. Why do I feel it's been a millennia since there was a Men in Black movie? And
who was in that one?
Was it your boy? It had to be. Will Smith, Tommy Lee Jones. Josh Brolin is the magical ingredient.
I remember that one. Okay,
Remember that.
Yeah, I wasn't interested.
I said out loud while watching this last one, I miss Will Smith.
Well, speaking of Will Smith, I heard that Grace saw Gemini Man and absolutely hated it, and I wanted to talk about it.
Ooh.
Well, only makes bad movies now.
Nobody. I haven't.
Exactly.
Yeah. I haven't met anybody who's met anybody who likes that movie.
Oh my God, it was. I mean, Tony and Marcus were like, oh, yeah, I'm thinking about going to see Gemini Man. Like, no, save your money. Save your money.
You were gravely serious. I wasn't even laughing. Yeah, your tone was like, no.
Yes.
Yeah, it wasn't even like.
I'm thankful. So I have that A-list, AMC A-list. So, I have the membership. So it's not like I'm like paying for it. And that was like the only way I was going to see it. Will Smith, he's just falling off faster and faster. And this was just, I don't know if this was supposed to be a comeback, if this was supposed to be like, let me get back into the action again. No, like sit down somewhere, do your motivational speaking. That's what you do best right now, and leave movies alone. I saw Aladdin, but I think that was different. I think that maybe it more of his speed, because that's similar to like what he was doing in Men in Black. But the action, had a predictable ending, an underwhelming ending. Save your pennies, save your money.
Grace just saved me like $30, seriously.
Yeah. I would hate for you all to go in there, because like halfway through I was like, man, if I didn't want to like just walk out, because I don't believe in walking out of a movie, I've not done that, but I was on the verge of it with this one, so yeah.
I think the only movie I've ever walked out of was The Illusionist in the mid-2000s.
Oh, I've never seen that.
I remember that movie.
The one that wasn't The Prestige?
Right.
Yeah, the not the Prestige movie. I've never seen that because it wasn't The Prestige. So I never saw
that. In that movie's defense, though, I was like 16 and with my boyfriend, so maybe it just wasn't. That movie was not for me in that moment in time.
Gotcha. Yeah, it just.
That's fair.
Anybody else on the chat ever walked out? Ever actually walked out of a film?
I don't think so. I've been thinking about that.
Go ahead.
Oh no, no. I definitely shut off renting.
I've definitely done that.
Was Catwoman.
I'm trying.
I've never shut off a film I was watching. What are you talking about, Marcus? If I turn it on, it must be finished no matter what.
Oh, I have that. Yo, for real, really? I do have that problem. Oh. I have a completionist issue.
I will dunk it. You're fucking done. I tweeted this the other day. Like, has anybody on the chat seen Hotel Artemis?
Yes.
No.
Another bad movie.
Hotel Artemis is bad, but in its defense, I think the first half of it is a very good movie. Like, I think I was on board 100% with that movie through the entire first half. It wasn't sold as a sci-fi movie. It is 100% a sci-fi movie.
Right.
It had great actors. It had Jodie Foster, like, doing it up in a genre film, like, big time. Brian Tyree Henry, Sterling K. Brown.
Oh. Yeah, this is pretty recent, right?
A year ago, I feel like I saw a preview. Yeah. Dave Bautista, it's terrible. But I think the first half of that really sells a good movie, and then it just completely goes to garbage, almost at the halfway point. And I was saying that, like, they should make a series of that, because I would watch it. If they had made a good series based on the ideas in that movie, I would absolutely watch that series. If I was in I don't know if I would have walked out of it in the theater. I did not see it in the theater, but like, that's a candidate, just because it really takes a huge nosedive.
I don't remember if I have. I feel like if I did, I think it was Any Given Sunday, I may have walked out.
Really?
That movie was, I don't know. For some reason, I can't watch that movie again, but I feel like that would be the movie. But I will tell you, the movie that I absolutely hated and turned off, like, after the first 15 minutes, was Held Up with Jamie Foxx and Nia Long. I was like, this is terrible. This is actually making me dumber. I can't do this.
But that was a very low budget.
Was that like around 95? Was that like 95, 96?
I can see why you left out of that. Yeah.
Was that like something you actually like paid for at Blockbuster?
No, I didn't pay for it. I didn't pay for Held Up. I saw that on TV, and then I was just like, no, I didn't pay all this cable to watch this.
I did the opposite with Biodome, in that I've only ever seen the second half of Biodome with Pauly Shore and some other white guy.
Why would you do that?
Oh, I've seen Biodome in the very recent past.
So I saw Biodome in the theater because I went to go see Strange Days, which I fucking adore. And then I like snuck into Biodome and it was halfway through and I saw the second half of it. So the first part. I've only ever seen the second half of Biodome that day.
That half as much.
The old Strange Days Biodome double feature.
That's 50% more Biodome than anyone ever needed to see.
I fell asleep during the third Matrix movie, which is almost like walking out.
We saw that in the theaters together.
I totally saw that with you, Marcus. I forgot.
I fell asleep during Aliens 3.
Yeah.
That was terrible.
I have a weird love for Aliens the third Alien.
Wait.
Yeah. It's got Charles S. Dutton. I saw that in the theater. Come on.
So that makes the movie better?
I mean, it sort of does, but it doesn't make it great.
Is there a Charles S. Dutton rule?
Wait, Tony, when's the last time?
Not quite, no.
Kind of? Wait, Tony, when did you see it?
Was it the weekend it came out?
I would recommend trying it again.
Am I wrong? I think David Fincher, Alan Smithied it. Like, is his name on it, or did he take it off it? Because that was, like, one of his first big breaks into the industry, and, like, he hated how it came out. Yeah, he really regretted it. I think if you get a copy of it now, his name might be in it. But even if it is, if I'm not mistaken, like, it was an Alan Smithy movie when it came out. Pretty sure.
I watched the very first Alien probably like 4 years ago. And I was like, okay, that was an excellent, perfect, I love it forever movie. So you say that it has spun off into many, many sequels, all of different tones than this. Is that correct? Oh,
yeah.
All right. So in that case, I refuse to watch any sequel ever made to this movie because I don't want it to be anything other than what I just saw.
That's fair.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
Oh, it's like the ostrich cinematic method?
Yes. I should have done that with the Terminator series, which I saw even more. I watched the first Terminator for the first time more recently than I saw Alien. And I was like, wow, I wasn't expecting Terminator to be a good movie, but where were all the references I heard growing up? And the person showing it to me was like, oh, that's in the second one. Yeah. And then we watched all the Terminator movies, and I was like, wait, so only the first one's a good film? Is that what's happening?
I roundly disagree.
You're anti-two?
Okay, you know what? Let me back up. I will say first two are good films.
There you go.
However, the first one is a more interesting type of film to me, as the second one was clearly maybe not capitalizing on, because it probably helped popularize this. It embodies everything that has become popular that is boring to me at this point. So it didn't read for me. Also, I have an eternal vendetta against precocious
Robert Patrick. Okay, yes, that was one of the quintessential precocious. Who on the chat remembers? Who on the chat remembers the red haired?
Oh God!
Skids? Oh my God! That is a '90s remnant that just does not age well.
Yeah, I totally agree about the Terminator films in the sense the second one has a different tone, and it was definitely more, let's make Arnold Schwarzenegger a good guy now because he's a movie star.
All right, but
I'm breaking the arms off my chair. Just for as we speak.
That's kind of where Terminator I was. Too. All right, so this is the thing, right? Yeah, all right. So I first experienced Terminator 2, in high school, and it's funny because I have two experiences of it. At the time, I just was like, it was a spectacle. I did recognize there was a good story in it, but I don't mean that to be dismissive of it, because when I rewatched it when I was older, I got a lot more out of it. You know what I'm saying? But like, yes, at the time. And I get what you're saying, Joe, because I think that it spawned countless, imitators. And if you only just experienced it recently, then you've kind of seen
like what it's inspired. Yeah,
the imitators, right, over and over again, and had time to become sick of that before you experienced it. But like thematically, there's a lot there. Like, I even love the fact that they really played around with the idea of, in her quest to keep her son safe, that Sarah Connor essentially became a Terminator. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't know. I just think there are some really interesting things happening there on a thematic and
I think Sarah Connor's character in Terminator 2 is like one of the all-time great women characters in cinematic history.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Like forever, like it is. She's absolutely amazing. Even like her relationship with her son, like the stuff in that film where she is someone who's experienced things that no one in the film can possibly understand, and they just have to trust her on, which is a very bizarre trope concept for a woman character in a film. And then beyond that, like she also has to basically like equip her son with like agency and trust and sort of let him be his own person, like to the point where you've got mom hanging out in like the desert like staring at her son and his like massive like Austrian robot He's just like, yeah, he's gonna have to hold it down, like, because that's, you know, that's like what the world needs. Like, that was mind blowing. Like, there's so much about Turner, and there are moments of beauty, there are moments of pathos. It does have a sort of patina of goofy blockbuster, which it did, like, then impart to, like, literally 1,000 films to follow. But man, I will stand T2. I saw it like more times than I've had hot meals when I was younger. But I saw it like about like 3 or 4 years, whenever the anniversary was, where they re-released in the theaters with like the redone version with 3D. Mm-hmm. I went to see it again then, and I hadn't seen it in years when I went to see it again, and I still loved it. And I hadn't seen it in a long time, and I really, really, I was like, this is still a great movie.
Right. I do love this film.
You can't take solace in the fact that is the majority opinion.
Yeah.
T2 is a national treasure. So I'm definitely a weirdo for Terminator 1.
I will say this. I think the one thing that really got me about this film is just the time period. When you growing up in the 80s during the Cold War, where, you know, I was always afraid that there was going to be a nuclear war, that movie, particularly the second one, freaked me the fuck out. That's one of those things where it's like it was a fantasy sci-fi, but also kind of a horror film in a way when I was a kid, because I was like, this is what's going to happen, because that was the type of person that I was when I was a child. But I still love the movie, even though I do recognize as an adult, like, I can see how it's cheesy. I really could.
I think I also, one of the specific tropes that I guess was less interesting to me, because specifically it had been popularized since the movie came out, is the trope of the tortured action woman. And the idea that, like, this is a strong female character because she's been through some shit and she's got a machine gun or whatever. Which, that is, like, so empowering if you've never seen it, or if it's new, or if it's being presented, like it's a fresh presentation. But by the time I got to the movie, I was like, I was way more into Sarah Connor when she didn't know what the hell was going on, and she was just being whisked away on this adventure by her destined love from the future, which is a very, like, feminine thing to like about her. What I loved about the first Terminator, we're gonna have babies and they're gonna save the world. And I'm like, wow, so important.
That sounds like a visual novel. Sarah Connor is like, oh god, all right, Sarah Connor is I guess if you look at it with what it inspired, like, she could be a sort of trope, but I don't know. Like, she's not she is someone who's been gaslit by an entire timeline. She's literally a woman gaslit by timeline.
But that's the trope, an abused woman who becomes a badass.
But it wasn't a trope when it was made.
It was a trope by the time I got to it. Different impact.
I get it.
It's still written. Well, but I something get it. Very important I didn't get to say about Men in Black International. So, my biggest beef with that movie is that I have an agenda where Tessa Thompson gets married to that blue alien that turned on its boss at a pivotal point in the movie, because so the movie starts with Tessa Thompson. She's really little, and she meets a tiny blue alien in her room, and that's how she knows aliens exist, and she makes it her quest to become a Man in Black. And then she becomes an alien.
It really does go down like that.
That's already not good.
Alien as an adult who's a villain now, but he's like a villain's henchman. And I thought, oh shit, here we go. This is very important because they set up this whole thing where she met this alien as a kid and that's her whole destiny or whatever. But yeah. Then the only thing that happens is that alien says, oh, hey, I know you, turns on his boss and lets them escape, and they never speak of it again. And I was like, that's right. It? That whole scene with the cute alien was like just Chekhov's gun for a convenient moment and has nothing to do with the plot. Oh,
yep.
Yep. Oh, man.
That about sums it up.
Just run right over and watch that film. So, Joe, what else have you been watching?
I've been watching a lot of horror lately. Well, it's Halloween, though. It's the month of Halloween, so it's the appropriate thing to be watching. I had a horror movie marathon recently, actually. I don't know if y'all are into horror, or any of you. Okay.
Yeah, no, I used to do a podcast about horror, but it's not. Oh, is that a genre?
Wait, what?
Yeah, no, yes.
Carry
horror
on,
fan.
Carry
horror
on.
Fan.
Carry
go on, go on, Jerry. Go on.
Yeah. Okay, I barely heard what he said, so I wasn't Leo'd.
All right, what do you got?
All right, so I watched one of the Into the Dark series that's on Hulu. It is, I think it's a monthly release thing where they put out a new horror movie as part of this big Into the Dark series. The one I saw was really bad. It's called All That We Destroy. It is about a serial killer whose mom is a genetic researcher. And she creates cloning technology in her basement so that she can clone his first kill over and over and over so he can relive it and not have to go kill any quote-unquote real people. And it sort of explores the humanity of the clone, partially, but then
okay.
Also, like, it's as dumb as it sounds. And basically, me and my friends are watching this, and the whole time we're just like, why hasn't this white woman sent her son to an institution where he can get
he can be helped.
She's like, no, it's okay. I have the technology to create a human life that matters less to me that you can kill in your room and mom will supervise. And I mean, it's a horror movie, so you're not supposed to.
Is that how we got from?
Oh, God, I hope so. And I thought that was going to be I believe it. I feel like...
Right.
Yeah, we
just want an explanation.
You know, I think he defies explanation.
Right.
And, like, I thought that was going to be the extent of the weird shit about this plot concept, but he goes on... The serial killer goes on to, like, make friends with, like, a woman of color who moves next door, and then he also lives with her.
Oh, no.
And yeah, she does lives. She live? No, wait. No, she doesn't. Never mind.
Yeah. Well, okay.
He dies.
God damn it.
And then after watching the film for like 45 minutes, I realized that the girl they were cloning is also a person of color. Like, she was kind of walking, so I wasn't sure. And then I Googled her, and I'm like, that's an actor of color. Okay. So then clone he's and over is a woman of color, and then she escapes, but when the police show up to the house, manages to call the police, she manages to kill the serial killer and the mom and all this stuff. The police are like, you're under arrest for killing this white family. It's so bad. It's one of
who is the filmmaker? I just feel like that's one of those ones where the filmmaker is like, I'm making a commentary.
I don't even think they were making a commentary. I think they just wanted like bad things to happen one right after the other, and they didn't actually analyze the fact that they cast, like, albeit a light skinned woman of color, they cast a woman of color in this role and had it end that way.
Right.
It was a lot. But I also saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre for the first time, which is another example.
The original?
The original.
Okay.
Which is another example of a film that, like, I mainly watched for like just historical knowledge. Mm-hmm. It built up so long that when I saw it, I thought, oh, this is gonna be crazy. I'm gonna like poop my pants. It's gonna be the scariest thing ever. And it was one of the tamest slashers I've ever seen. And it's because of when it came out, it was really the only slasher anyone had.
Yeah, it predated. Right. It predated all those other.
So at the time, it was like a really jarring thing to film and show people. But yeah, I'm glad I watched it because I really, really love horror. Actually, it's my favorite genre, even though I don't work in it. But yeah, I'm glad to have that under my belt, even though it's dated as heck, y'all.
It's actually a comedy now, the way it looks. It really is.
Yeah.
Have you seen Tigers Are Not Afraid?
No, but it's on my list.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's almost a stretch to call it a horror. It's not quite a horror movie. It's sort of an urban horror, slightly sort of an urban fantastical horror, but it's very, very good.
Oh, I also recently saw Midsommar.
Okay.
How was that?
I've seen Midsommar. What did you think about Midsommar?
I love Midsommar. I also was amused by how obvious the director's hand is. And I think it's amusing to me only because he has two films, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. they both bear such a striking visual resemblance to each other that it took me out of the experience at times in Midsommar. Like I said.
Yeah.
Is that the director of
Ari Aster? Yeah.
I think it's a really good film. And I also think that it is partially intentionally, but then partially unintentionally, a like comment about white supremacy.
That's what I think. I wrote a review of it, and that was a big couch for it. Like that, it is. I think it's sort of it has a lot to do with white supremacy. There's a detail about it that this really annoys me because this is like the amorphous energy of the internet. When I was first writing that review, I dug and dug and dug and dug and dug and found an interview that he did with somebody. And I haven't seen the movie a second time, but I intend to see it again. There is apparently when they arrive to the place they're going in the film. Apparently there are protesters holding a sign saying keep immigrants out of Sweden. Mm. Like when they land in that country. But it's in Swedish. And you wouldn't know it unless you happen to know Swedish. And it's apparently like a background element, but that he included very specifically. I cannot fucking find the proof that that is true because wherever the hell I found that nugget is gone now because I've looked everywhere online for it and I know that I read it. So I'm like, all right, I'm just gonna have to watch the movie again and like write down like what I precisely see. But that was like sort of his, you know, somewhat coy way of being like, yeah, that's what like. I mean, these are white. They are white. They're kind of white supremacists to a purity, like, you know, rarely really discussed. How they like react to the people of color in that film is very notable. But I don't think accidental. I don't think that like the movie is like, well, some brown people, let's kill them because it's a horror movie. It's like, no, like they're literally targeting them because they see them as disposable.
Oh, yeah. I think it's subtle enough that most white people who see it are missing it, mm-hmm. but overt enough that pretty much every person of color I know who's seen it is like, oh yeah, that movie about white supremacy.
Well, that's
the,
good.
I doubted myself when I thought that just because my instinct is always to not give a white director or writer that much credit.
Right.
Like if I see a narrative that seems to like be sympathetic to us, then I'm like, well, surely they didn't mean that. So I'm very pessimistic about it. So I looked up like analyses of the film to see if anyone else brought it up. And there was one where they quote him saying that he specifically said that one of his inspirations for the film was Nazi resurgence in Scandinavia. And one of the ways that he intentionally sort of symbolized that in the film was through the character, sort of like the seer, like soothsayer of their village, who is deformed from years of incest.
Yeah.
Because they consider his incestuous deformities a sign of his purity, and therefore wisdom and superiority.
Oh, I gotcha. Right. Yeah. Right, like he's a royal.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. It's interesting how the trailer for that like kind of implies that there's going to be some whole like offensive thing about that particular character, but there really isn't. They're a very like minor part of the whole arrangement.
Yeah. I guess you could argue that there is a problematic aspect of using someone's physical deformity / disability as a metaphor for racist society. Like this character represents something toxic and evil and bad because they're so ugly.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, some people actually look like that and they're not.
Yeah.
They're not evil. So that's something.
Very true.
But yeah. That's sort of a, for better or worse, that is a hallmark of horror. Disability is used in horror, and it's often as something to fear. Whether it's someone scary because they're deformed, or these people are going to eat you because they're inbred, or this person's going to murder you because he's a psychopath. Or watch out, multiple personalities.
Right, right. Are there any shows that you're watching?
American Horror Story.
Oh, nice. I see there's a theme here.
That's the first one that I haven't been watching like regularly. Up to this current season, I have been watching them, but I haven't quite got on to this one. And so I wasn't sure if I should, if it's worth it or not. So.
Oh, Grace, I don't think any of them are worth it.
Well, you have a point. I mean, I think I was just trying to be loyal, you know, but I guess my loyalty has kind of ran out a little bit.
Listen, I have seen every episode ever of American Horror Story, and any time I'm in the middle of a season, I cannot shut up to anyone who will listen about how bad it is. But I keep... I have to watch it. I have to see what they're going to do next, because it makes me so mad.
Yeah, I feel you.
They've been better than ever this season. So that's your little taste.
Gotcha.
That's so funny.
Oh, have any of you seen Promare?
No.
Okay, so y'all's homework is to find a theater that is showing Promare and see it immediately. Have you at least heard of it?
Yeah.
Promare is the first feature-length film from Studio Trigger. It's an anime film that I would compare in terms of the viewing experience to Enter the Spider-Verse. It is something you have to see on an enormous screen, the bigger the better. It is an assault on your senses, just colorful anime style. And it is about mecha riding firefighters.
Yeah, I just Googled it. Yeah. Elite firefighter pilot mechanical suits to save the world from flame wielding mutants.
Yeah, it's by the Kill la Kill dude. He also did he did Gurren Lagann and Dead Leaves. He's very, very, everything he does is worth watching for sure.
Yeah, I've seen it twice already. It's the sort of movie that gets like the whole theater cheering at all the same parts.
Nice.
I'll definitely see if it's around. I know that I need to go see the new Bong Joon-ho soon, but I'm sure there's somewhere in LA that's playing Promare. I just haven't investigated.
You have to. It's worth it. It's important that we all share this moment, much like when Beyonce dropped that album in 2013.
All right.
Fair enough. I you know what I have seen is Seis Manos. Has anyone watched it?
Yes.
All right.
That's also on my backlog.
Okay, great.
I enjoyed it. Off the recommendation of Tony, I watched it literally after he recommended it, and definitely thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yes. Love it. Yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's on Netflix, right?
I think it's hellaciously overrated.
I love how you like, y'all seen that and then wait for us to do it.
Right.
Leo, do you, let me ask real quick, do you mean that? Are you being serious?
I seriously mean that. I think it's very slapdash. And I think that it has highs, it has its high moments, but I think it's extremely slapdash.
I was just gonna say mm-hmm. that the reason I haven't jumped on it is because as soon as I looked at it, that was my prediction for what it was going to be like.
It's frustrating because like it has some reasonably high highs. I will go out there and say it, even though this is absolutely not my place. I think Mike Coulter's character is an absolute abomination. I think he's fucking awful, and he almost redeems himself by the end of it, almost. But overall, that whole it introduces you to an enormous black muscular character with a short afro, where the entire joke, the show is making, is that he's fucking his white boss's wife. That's one of the first scenes in the show, and he's like, "Yeah, I'll tell it after I fuck your wife." And he's like, "Yeah, shut up." He's actually fucking his wife in the hotel room, and he's like, "Well, baby, I don't." I'm like, "What the? Is this like the start of a bad joke? Like, are you fucking kidding me?" And then, for about six episodes of the show, he's basically just consistently mocking the culture that he's in, which I understand that that could be like a sort of, I don't know, an irreverent commentary on multiculturalism or something. But essentially, he spends about six episodes of an eight-episode series just like making fun of Mexican mysticism whenever he sees it. He calls it voodoo. He doesn't understand it. He's poignantly dumb, like just as a joke, and then he sort of finally gets it, and then it even has like the dignity of this like implied relationship that he's building with this Mexican police officer, until the show like reveals a 30-second awkward moment where he puts his hand around her and then acts all awkward. I'm like, what is this, G.I. Joe from the fucking 80s? Like, it's so tone deaf and embarrassing and immature for such huge parts of it. On top of that, while I do think that there's like this interesting idea about like a sort of a cultural crossover concept, which the show is sort of based on, which this is combination of like Chinese martial arts and Chinese approaches to philosophy with this town that's like ransacked by the narcos. But like knowing that, like, I don't know, having like a sort of like, you know, Pai Mei, like Fu Manchu sort of creation, who says a lot of essentially like stereotypical platitudinous aphorisms, just like blathering like, "Child, you must know that to be at peace is to," I know that the heart's in the right place, but like everybody watching this has sort of like seen this be slapdash before, and it's weird to like really emphasize that we're just supposed to trust that you're taking this to like a good place. Beyond that, there is in as goofy and immature as the show is, it then is really like eager about showing you intensely offensive violence, as in the murder of an entire town with Mexican bodies piled up in a huge heap like cordwood, which is an image that some of us have seen before, and there's nothing cute or like genre fun about it, or a child dying in literally the first two episodes. Like, the show is not, the show doesn't bring me to a serious enough point to respect that. I just see it and I'm like, okay, this is like echoes of like real life shit. And then like 2 seconds later, your large semi-Afro black man is making a joke about what's this voodoo we're doing in here? I don't understand your voodoo. Keeps calling it all voodoo.
Something that makes me run the other way incredibly fast from anything is when it sort of like celebrates like to an almost like obscene level celebrates machismo, and I don't care whose culture's machismo it is. I am just not interested. So I feel like my gut instinct about this was on the money based on everything you've said. And that was a really impressive off-the-cuff review. Well,
I'm sorry that I just bothered. I didn't realize how like sort of upset about the show I was, because it is a sort of like, it's a milestone in animation that like I don't want to totally shit on, and it has there's something. It's not totally empty. There's something in there. There's the glow of something. There's something good in there, but I was like really put off by like an enormous amount of it, and yeah, like it sort of upset me. Also, the guy who plays Jesus is Johnny Cruz, who's Lucio from Overwatch, which is like my favorite game, which has really disappointed me lately. And he's like in it, and his character is like probably one of the best things about it, to be honest. But it made me, it really disappointed me, and I didn't trust it. I didn't trust it on the whole, and that was like a serious problem with it. By the peeps who did Castlevania too, I like Castlevania.
Oh, I'm glad you like Castlevania. I'm waiting for you to shit on that too.
Right.
I enjoy Castlevania.
No, I love Castlevania. Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely not Castlevania.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to go on a rant. I really, this is way too late in the podcast for me to like,
it's all good.
Do a
it's
rant.
All good.
No, I appreciate these perspectives. It helps me decide what to watch.
Okay, so we have I know we're probably going over time. So Zoe Kravitz is Catwoman.
Yes!
Thumbs up.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, okay. I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Good. I think we're all in agreement. The Mandalorian schedule just came out for those who want Disney Plus or thinking about getting Disney Plus. I'm personally getting it because, well, I'm waiting
in the wings for it.
To the last shred of my autonomy in a democratic society before I subscribe to Disney Plus.
But yeah, so the schedule came out. It looks pretty good. I think it starts November 1st. Let me look at that. No, November 12th it starts episode one, and then every couple of days it will continue until December 27th, which would be episode 8. I'm assuming that's an 8-episode season. So look out for that. Picard looks dope, and I know that's on another paid-for streaming app, and I just stopped paying for the CBS app. I'm probably going to have to renew it just for the few months it's going to take me to watch all of Star Trek, because I'm a Star Trek head. So I don't know if anyone's seen the trailer to Picard, but it looks really good.
It does.
Also, I think either yesterday or today, probably just this week, is the 8th anniversary of Batman Arkham City. Love this game.
You mean the game? Okay, I was trying to figure out. Okay, the game. It's the 8th anniversary of the game.
Okay.
What did you think? I meant like the
building? I don't know. I was like, was there a cartoon based on the comic that I like missed or something?
No.
Okay, so, all right.
I would like to do a podcast on this. I think Marcus.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, just.
I'll podcast Arkham City. I love Arkham City. Yeah.
All right. So you heard it here.
Yeah, I'm down. I'm totally down.
By the way, who's playing Boba Fett in The Mandalorian?
I don't think it's Boba Fett,
is it?
No, it's just a Mandalorian, and I hate to say it, just a Mandalorian. because I'm not entirely...
That Mandalorians will mess you up, man.
I thought it was going to be Boba Fett.
No, what is this dude's name? Anybody help me with that?
Why isn't Star Wars, like, cross-promoted, like, a Boba tea called, like, the Boba Fett tea? Why is that not happening?
Oh, my goodness.
I can't even answer that.
Because it would be offensive, probably. That would be offensive on multiple levels.
Oh, yeah. I cannot even answer that. Okay, so I will find the name of the person. I don't remember his name off the top of the head. I do know that he was in Game of Thrones. He played Oberyn.
I love him.
Oh, yeah. I like him. Yeah, he's a good one. Okay.
Leo's favorite show ended for the season, Succession. Fabulous. Yeah.
I did finish it off.
Oh my god. If you're not watching it, y'all need to. That's all I'm gonna say.
I've never seen a show full of white people I don't give a fuck about failing.
At all.
Like, and just loving it.
At all.
I'm just...
Oh, so they do
I'm
fail.
So happy when they... It's all schadenfreude. There's nothing about the show where I'm like, oh, I hope Ken gets it. I'm like, yeah, you're all dicks. You're all fucking worthless. You're all fucking Trump juniors. You can all get fucked.
Well, that's what I love about the Bluths is their...
But the Bluths are even at least, like, surprisingly more moderately, like, I don't know, relatable is too hard a word, but you feel bad. But you feel bad sometimes for them. I've never felt bad for anybody in the show ever.
It's also very extremely well acted, but it's great. It's great. I really like it.
Good. It's very good.
Did any of you ever watch Big Little Lies?
Yes. Yes, I've seen both. I'm afraid you're going to hate it.
You know, nothing has been the same on this show.
Big Little Lies actually changed my entire life. And for once about a show, that's not an exaggeration. That's very literal. Mm-hmm. I can't get into how it changed my life on the podcast, so we do have a truth buffer. But it seriously did. I absolutely love it. I can't get through a single episode without losing my whole shit and just crying. I really, really love it, and I'm really mad that there's no more coming.
It ended? Like, there's no season 3?
It got canceled after the season 3. Yeah. Now, like, how do you cancel a show after adding Meryl Streep to it? That doesn't make any sense.
That's insane. I didn't even know she was on it.
You know what? I want to flip my laptop. So there are two seasons. There are two seasons. I thought season 1 was phenomenal. Season 2 was really good. They added Meryl Streep, and her performance in some of these episodes were just, like, stunning. I can't believe they canceled it.
I can't either. I just knew it was going to be another one.
Oh my god, okay, all right.
Okay, yeah, okay, go on.
I just can I ask at least which season changed your life? Was it season 1 or season 2?
It was season 1.
Okay, yeah, season 1 was really, yeah, okay. And then I think one more thing before we go. What is everybody reading? And I'll go first just to kick it off. House of X and Powers of X, all 6 issues came out. It's a great read, kicking off the new millennia of X-Men. And I think that I'm actually considering collecting X-Men again, to be honest with you. Other things, Quarter Killer from Vita Ayala and Danny Lohr, I highly recommend that. I did interview them as part of our Patreon interview. It should be coming out soon for everyone else. Black Ghost by Alex Segura. He's also he also writes for Comixology what is it called? Originals, which is what also Quarter Killer is on. And then Promethe 1313. Yes, all three of these books, I interviewed their creators, but the books are really good. And they're on Comixology Originals. If you have the Comixology Unlimited, the first issue is free. So definitely check those out. All right, what are y'all reading?
I have read a few good things lately. The most recent one I read was The Prince and the Dressmaker by Jen Wong. It recently won an Eisner as well. Has anyone else read it?
Nope.
On my list.
Yeah, you definitely have to read it. It's great. I don't know if you've read any other Jen Wong, but Jen Wong is just incredible. Everything they've ever done is worth reading. For folks who haven't heard of it or picked it up, it is about an Edwardian-era prince who hires a dressmaker to make dresses for him. And it's a secret because it's the Edwardian era and no one can know that he secretly likes to cross-dress. And their friendship as it develops and him sort of figuring out that it's more than just wanting to dress up, that it's part of his identity. And I'm using he pronouns because they do so throughout the entire book. My takeaway was that the character is bi-gender, because they express comfort in both their prince clothes and their princess clothes. But yeah, it is a great book. It is beautiful. The story is very touching and has a lot of pathos and levity throughout. And yeah, it's just an excellent read. It absolutely deserved the Eisner. Other than that, I've also been reading, or I recently finished reading Tilly Walden's Spinning, which is so, so good.
She's brilliant.
I know you like Tilly Walden, Leo. Have others read Spinning yet?
No.
Can't say I have.
No, yeah,
you have to. Tilly Walden is really, really impressive. I think she's like maybe 22 now. She was 19 when she started doing On a Sunbeam. And she's already like making graphic novels, winning Eisners, taking names, and with good reason. She has a really unique voice. Everything that she writes, whether it's memoir or fiction, just feels so authentically and intimately coming from her heart. Like she's just, I don't know how to describe it. She's just so personal and authentic in everything that she writes, in her character interactions, and the feelings that she shares. And meanwhile, her art is extremely minimal. It's very basic lines and basic shapes that communicate so much information because they're all just perfectly placed where they need to be to communicate. I think she's a genius, straight up. So definitely read her work.
Anyone else? What else are y'all reading?
Well, I'm not reading anything because my time has been wrapped up with so many other things, but I've been watching some things. So that compensates for my reading right now. And mainly Evil with Mike Coulter that comes on Thursdays, and Black Lightning on Mondays. So there's some other shows, but as far as being applicable to Black Comics Chat, I get Evil and Black Lightning are things occupying my time on TV.
Nice.
I gotta catch up on Black Lightning.
Yeah, it's only two episodes in, so it's pretty early.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. Oh, Marcus like, yeah, I got that.
Marcus has a list, actually.
We all do.
I do.
Right, yeah.
At least you don't have to watch Game of Thrones anymore, Marcus.
Yeah, I am going to finish it, though, my whole completion.
Oh, and I forgot, Watchmen is, just speaking of HBO, that starts on Sunday, so that will be added to my list.
I'm waiting for it. Yeah. Absolutely waiting for it.
Yeah, looks good. Looks good, I must say.
The Boys looks like I'm it'll make interested. Me mad. Has anyone seen The Boys?
So, yes.
No, I haven't
but wait,
watched.
Leo, have you watched it yet?
Busy.
I've watched it.
So, no, it's all good. It's all good. Yeah. So, Joe, I would say the comic book made the series. I feel like the comic book made me furious. It really did. The TV show, I think you could deal with it because the TV show retained some of the really interesting things from the comic. It also I think that it recognizes some of the places that the comic book went too far, or they just plain couldn't do on TV, even if it's Amazon. And they do right some of those wrongs. And then some of the wrongs that do happen definitely bear consequences where there weren't consequences before. So, I mean, I think that it's a really engaging show.
And this is which show again?
Yeah.
I enjoy The Boys,
Yeah, Grace liked it. I mean, I would recommend it.
Right,
I'm not saying it won't make you mad in places, you know what I mean? But it's not one of those shows where, like, the stuff that makes you mad has no consequences.
Like, I can get mad at the characters for the choice they're making, but then there's, getting mad at, like, who decided to write this and why.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes, yeah, this is definitely more of the mad at the characters variety.
Yeah, I can do that. I love Breaking Bad.
Exactly. Yeah, no, nobody's worse than Walter. As bad, maybe. But
Walter's pretty bad.
Leo, what are you watching?
Obviously I finished Succession finally. Mm-hmm. And I finished this show called Seis Monos, which may have come up earlier. And I heard there's some upsetting things in it later on. I haven't gotten up to it yet, but I currently started season 3 of Big Mouth, which I love, and so far it's great.
I'm on season 1 of Big Mouth.
I love Big Mouth so much.
I'm on 2.
Oh my god.
It's so offensively great. I love it. It's very, very good. And kind of educational and honest and straightforward and awkward, and I like it. I don't think it's perfect by any stretch, but I don't know. I sort of feel like, wow, and this is both scary and weird. Like, I feel like if I was a kid, I would have probably got a lot out of that show, even though I'm not supposed to be watching it. I think if I was like a little kid, I would have responded in a certain way to it. But as it stands, I do really enjoy that show. Am I watching anything else? I'm watching. I still am so behind on the Wu-Tang show. I'm so.
Same.
I know. I need to catch up with it. I've just been like working and just busy as hell.
And I just discovered there's a podcast where they basically after.
Are you kidding? Like, wow! Look, I was taking notes even in the first episode. I was like, this. They.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they expanded.
Okay. Oh, also, if anybody hasn't seen it, I mean, I think Perpetual Grace Limited is awesome. And I highly recommend that. You need to get Epics. You need to get Epics for it, though.
Nope. All right, that's what
that's by the guys who did Patriot, which is one of my favorite shows of all time, and it's very good.
Marcus,
Powers of X. I'm not completely finished, but I'm much closer. I'm near the end of the series. Definitely, I got to the big reveal or a big reveal.
Oh, there's several. More. Absolutely,
I'm really digging it. Yeah. But I think you know the one I'm talking about. It's around book 5. So yeah, I definitely want to talk
to you
at some point. Yeah, what else? Deadly Class. I read the most recent one of that, which I am bummed that that's not coming back for a season two, because I really like what they did with the show, and they found a way to make that very weird, specific book into an actual working TV show, but it didn't get brought back. So that's nice. And actually, Leo, I remember one time you asked me about it, and it occurred to me, I didn't mention it at the time because it hadn't occurred to me, but in some ways, I feel like if I had to pitch it, I would say it's a lot of what we're doing with Snow Days, except as opposed to the kids attending a regular high school, they're attending a school for assassins. But thematically and even like feel wise, I feel like there's.
Do you think it's litigious?
Appreciate. Nah, I would have. I definitely would have made that call to you earlier if I felt like we could have. If it was actionable, I feel like, yeah, I would let you know.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's it though. But yeah, I dig Deadly Class. It's a good book.
Okay.
I have one I unlocked. So when we were getting ready to go on air and everything, you know, I was sending y'all DMs that it was gonna be a few minutes, and it was because my daughter had gotten a splinter that I had been struggling to get out, you know, all evening, and right before we were supposed to go on, I finally got it out,
So it was
that achievement I unlocked. Nice. It's not the first splinter I've removed, but this was a splinter with time, you know.
Right, right, against the clock.
An issue, so.
Right, right.
Yeah, it was against clock splinter.
Hey, out here playing like Vince Carter. That's cool.
Right.
So, for anyone listening, there is a reason why we didn't mention the Joker, because we did our own little show just on the Joker. So please check that out. But. Joe, have you seen The Joker?
I have not seen The Joker purely out of fear to be in a public place while The Joker is playing. Because last time there was a particularly good Joker performance in a theater, guns happened. If you'll remember that mass shooting that happened when Heath Ledger's Joker first debuted.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I know there's been a lot of fear about that, and I definitely feel it. So I'm like, I'm going to wait until The Joker's on DVD. I feel like...
Don't blame you.
I'm excited about The Joker based on the trailer because I like it as someone who's into... Or I like the idea as someone who's into true crime. And it's sort of like, yes, tell me how this person became a slayer or came out as a sociopath. You know, this could be a great movie if it feels like Silence of the Lambs, but a Batman themed. Mm. But I feel like it's going to feel more like, I don't know, insert Quentin Tarantino movie here.
Mm.
Interesting.
Yeah. Although I have to say, I mean, and I'm sure it's been spoken about, I'm sure, but like Silence of the Lambs, man, that's a problematic movie to go back
it
to.
It is a very problematic movie. It's also very, the problematic aspects of it are also very interesting. Yeah.
Well, I would suggest that you don't listen to our podcast because it's filled with spoilers.
yeah. Right. Listen right. after you watch it.
But I think the general consensus is you should at least see it once.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I would agree.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's it. I don't know if anyone has anything else to say. Okay.
No.
I think we have.
Yeah. Back Power and Magic Volume 2.
Kickstarter.
Awesome.
Yes, indeed.
And where can they find you and your Kickstarter?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Joamette Gill. That's JoAmetteGil. And we're also at Power and Magic PR on Twitter. That second one will have all the links to the Kickstarter. You can also just search Power and Magic on Kickstarter. We're the only Power and Magic thing happening. And we are going through November 9th, so get yours before then.
That's right. That's right. I have certainly backed it. I think everyone here, I believe, has backed it.
We all have.
So we stand behind our Kickstarters for sure. Grace, where can they find you on the interwebs?
Instagram, LoveJones20, Twitter, GBreezy20. Yep.
Nice. Leo, where can they find you on the interwebs and any of your work?
They can find me at LeonardoEFF on Twitter, and I am writing for Quirktastic and Screen Rants and Parts Unknown.
Nice. Marcus.
At Marcus Kwame on Twitter and at Marcus _ Kwame on
Instagram. So, of course, I ask this every time. You still can't talk about whatever it is you're working on?
I can't talk, but I will give you a hint. It's not a hint because I'm legally, I can't even give you a hint, but an out of context, I've been drawing a panel that involves a bunch of stupid racists.
Is the writer Quentin Tarantino?
No, but the writer is somebody that
Yay. Okay. As for me, you can find me on Twitter, on Instagram, Latinegro. My website is anthonyotero.com, where you can find my novels. And there will also be a link to Puerto Rico Strong, which all monies will go to Puerto Rico and those affected by Hurricane Maria. Puerto Rico is still in trouble, so don't feel like, oh, well, you know, the hurricane was like 2 years ago. I don't need to buy it. You still should buy the book because there is some amazing art, amazing stories, or simply because we won an Eisner. So anyway, have a good night, y'all.
This is cool, man. You've done the full arc from being reluctant at the beginning right. episode to leaving.
Yeah. I want us to recognize that Tony legit tried to get the exclusivo off Marcus real quick. He was like, maybe he'll tell us, and then we could be the place that like broke it. Man,
I mean,
right.
I'm gonna continue asking.
Trying to get me to violate contractual.
He tried.
Contracts.
He did try. Have a good night. Thank you so much.
So thank you, Joe. Good night, everybody.
All right, thank you all. Bye.
Black Comics Chat.